say that you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So when you make a first impression, or when someone makes a first impression on you, what is the first thing that you remember from someone? Is it that person's hair? Is it the person's eyes? Many guys say that the very first thing they remember about a girl is her smile. I don't think so. So, what else do you remember from a first impression? What's the first thing you remember about me?
Three names.
Okay. What else do you remember besides hair and eyes and smile?
I remember, to me, you seemed very still within, you know, just very centered and still.
Most you were young, younger than that.
Everybody
knows. I remembered your close scrubbed youth. How's that?
Okay. Very poetic.
Well, we first met at the writer's group in Hanover, and you sat right beside me.
Mm-hmm.
She's quiet. But the more I heard her talk, she's very talented and intelligent, and I could learn a lot from her. And I enjoy learning from someone that's half my age.
I'm probably a third. I was thinking, I didn't say it.
You all know, first impressions are really hard to change. And as many of you have pointed out, many people think that I am young. And so one of my challenges is to convince others that I'm experienced, that I'm not necessarily as young as I look, but even if I'm young to them, I know what I'm talking about. But I've been in the publishing business for nearly 10 years. I have an undergraduate degree in English, a master's in publishing, and 3 certificates in my field. I have a certificate in book publishing, 1 in editing, and 1 in professional editing. My clients are both publishers and authors. When I'm working directly with publishers, I'm working on projects, books that have been contracted for. So though they may need some developmental editing, it's not nearly as much as when I'm working directly with an author. When an author comes to me and says, oh, my manuscript is in pretty good shape, I'm worried. A lot of the comments that I say to my authors are the very same comments that the publishers are thinking. And are oftentimes the very reasons why authors are receiving those rejections. So sometimes people may think that my comments are harsh or, oh, I disagree with that comment. And you can, and you don't have to take what I'm saying and make those changes. It is your baby. It is not mine. But just remember, some of those things that you don't change could be why you're getting that rejection. So, what's the first thing that you noticed about a book?
Cover.
Okay. Anything else?
Title.
Colors. Okay.
Size.
Okay.
Cost.
Okay. So now, imagine yourself going into Borders. You're looking for a good book to buy. So you're going to be picking up a book that piques your interest based on those items. You know, you're going to see a book that is colorful. It might have a good title. So the cover art, those things are going to pique your interest. So once you pick a book up off the shelf, what's the next thing that you might look at? The back cover, okay? But that's not really going to give you a flavor of the book because the back cover is written by marketing, not by the author. So, and then sometimes, yep, that's where I'm going. If you're lucky that this book has 2 paragraphs about the book, some books don't even have that. Sometimes it's quote after quote after quote after quote, or maybe it's just a picture of the author. So the back cover is sometimes useless because it's marketing copy. The entire cover of the book, front, back, and spine, are all marketing. So you're going to turn to that first page. You're in the bookstore, you're wanting to buy a book, so you turn to the first page and you read it. And it sucks. So what do? You throw it aside, and you look for a new book to buy. That's how important your first pages are. So now imagine you have your manuscript in hand. You're sending it off to your publisher, or your wannabe publisher. We don't have the cover art to look at. The publisher can't look at that. You might have a book title, but it's probably going to be rewritten by marketing department anyway. So, little value there. So what's the publisher going to look at? Your first line, your first page, right. So they read that first line, and if it sucks, rejection.
Just on the first line?
Yes.
Can you give us an example?
It was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah. Yes, right there. Yes. If it's a cliche, if you go to agent blogs, they often say, do not start a book with this. Do not start. Every agent blog, do not start and then halfway down the page, I find out we're in a dream. Do not do that. Many agents say, do not kill someone in the first page. I don't want to see blood. And then a lot of cliches, like what he was saying. So those kind of things. Okay.
Now, there are some books that start with death. Lee Child. Was it Divine? No, that was David Baldacci. One where he. Anyway, it started off with a death. It was a death in the desert from exposure. But
of course, it's okay. Going to depend upon your agent. Because your agent may not reject your book because it sucks. Your agent may reject your book, or an agent may reject your book because it doesn't fit what they're trying to build their profile to be. If I'm an agent and I'm trying to only do young adult princess books, and you send me a young adult prince book, well, I'm going to reject it because it's not what I'm looking for. So it all depends on that. Okay? So this is how important, how paramount your opening lines are, because it's going to make or break. It's going to determine whether your manuscript gets published. What goals should your opening accomplish? There's four main goals that I want to discuss, and in all of my discussions, my examples are going to come from The Wizard of Oz. All right, so goal number one is to introduce a story-worthy problem. What problem is occurring in the character's life that is so important an entire book, short story, whatever, has to be written about it? So a story-worthy problem. So in The Wizard of Oz, what is the story-worthy problem?
She wants to go home.
But that's only once she gets to Oz. Most people forget about the black and white scene before The Wizard of Oz.
No.
So what is the story-worthy problem?
Her away from home.
Right.
The mean woman wants to take her dog.
Right. Before that, yeah. See, people always forget this black and white part. But the black and white part has to include the story-worthy problem. So what problem occurs in the black and white part before and after? And
she's restless.
She wants to get away from home. Mm-hmm. She lives with her aunt. Isn't she? She's not with parents. She's with relatives, and she's not feeling connected. Mm-hmm. I mean, she doesn't feel at home.
Right.
She feels like everyone's against her.
She's unhappy. That's the basic premise. I'm unhappy. So that's her story-worthy problem. That's the whole reason why everything that occurs in the black and white scene is showing or emphasizing how unhappy she is. Okay. So number two, the second goal, is to hook the reader. So in The Wizard of Oz, how are we being hooked?
That's the mean lady.
The mean lady hooks you?
I think the storm.
The storm?
When she meets the guy that's going to be the wizard and talks with him.
That neighbor? Okay. Yeah, we have a likable character, so she's friendly. We can kind of relate to her because she's a person we want to like. And she's feeling an emotion that almost everyone has felt at one time. They're unhappy. They want to find a place to call home. And then we have this tornado that takes her into this crazy place. Before you even see Oz, you're hooked. For the most part, because you have this likable person in an unhappy situation. You can associate with that because everybody's been in that kind of a situation. Okay. So the third goal is to establish the rules of your world that you have created. The rules can be anything that you as the author desire, but they have to be consistent. So what do I mean by that? I'll give the example for this, because this one's a little bit harder to come out. You see Dorothy's upset with her life. And you see she's on a farm in Kansas. So from the setting that you see, you see her singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You're not going to see her come out and start rapping. That doesn't fit the setting. That doesn't fit the rules that the author has created. Singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow is emphasizing that she's unhappy, that she doesn't feel at home. And the soothing sound of the song, it goes with her likable character. So it's consistently portraying the rules that the author has created. And then the fourth goal is to forecast the ending. You need to give the reader a hint at how it's going to end, what's going to happen. And even though you hint at the ending, so the reader knows kind of what's going to happen, they're still intrigued enough that they want to follow that character in the journey. So we see a likable character, and we see her in an unhappy situation. In just the black and white part, you can kind of figure out that she's probably going to go on a journey because of the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow, because it's talking about going away. But because she's a likable character, it's probably going to be a happy ending. She's probably going to find her way home, whether it's with her aunt and uncle back in the same location or not, you don't know that. But because she's a likable character, it's probably going to be a happy ending. So you're foreshadowing it by her being a likable character and by her singing that song. So once your first page has accomplished these four goals, is your first page pristine? Is it ready to go? Can we publish it now? No. In addition to those four goals, there are 10 components that must be included in your opening page.